30 years ago today, China's communist government began a violent crackdown on pro-democracy demonstrators in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. Military tanks rolled through the protesters' camps, shooting and killing hundreds who had gathered there. In the 30 years since the massacre, China has tried to censor any mention of the events at Tiananmen Square. In advance of today's anniversary, Chinese officials created a so-called Great Firewall of China, which blocks all websites that mention Tiananmen, the massacre, or the date, June 4th, 1989. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. to talk about the legacy of Tiananmen is Renee Xia, the director of the Chinese Human Rights Defenders Network. Renee, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
Also with us is Arthur Kent, and he covered the Tiananmen protest as an independent TV journalist. He's now a filmmaker and recently restored his 30-year-old footage to make a short film about Tiananmen called Black Night in June. Arthur, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Arthur, there had been about 2.5 months of protests at Tiananmen before the martial law declaration. What was happening and how did it get to that point?
Well, there was almost a carnival atmosphere attached to the demonstrations, great exuberance, these massive crowds, not just in Beijing, but in cities across China. I visited Xi'an, the ancient capital, and the students there from Northwest University had as well built an encampment in the center of the city, and it began marking revering the passing of a reform-minded member of the Chinese communist leadership, and then it picked up steam as the students, with great optimism and hope for democratic reform, and most of all for reform of corruption, which the Chinese people perceived in the leadership, corruption which continues to this day, sadly, but it mounted force, and sadly, on the 20th of May, the hardliners within Deng Xiaoping's communist leadership took sway, and a gentleman named Li Peng declared martial law on the 20th of May. Thereafter, there was an increase in tension and a feeling that there would be a reckoning, although no indication that such a bloody act as the assault of June 3rd and 4th was coming.
Renee, what can you tell us about the political mood of China in 1989? I mean, understanding that you were in school in the United States at the time.
Yeah, the country had opened up since the late 70s after Mao died, after the disastrous Cultural Revolution. So for 10 years, it was this opening up, and it's called the Thought Liberation Movement. So lots of censorship blocks were left. People were able to read books and newspapers and films from abroad. And the market was starting to experiment, opening, the economy started to grow. People had this sense of liberation, particularly from the ideological point of view. A lot of the mistakes Mao made were discussed openly. So I think it was natural for the students, Tiananmen Square, where even though they started with a calling for end corruption, but they quickly moved on to call for democratization and freedom of press. There was, as Arthur described, there was this a sense that China is going to go somewhere, and there, efforts, their demonstration will draw attention to help the party. That's the key. They think they are helping the party to clean itself up and move forward.
Renee, we mentioned at the top of the show that Chinese officials have essentially blocked information for people in China to get any information about what happened at Tiananmen, the massacre, the date. Are you surprised by that?
I'm not surprised because they have blood on their hands and they feel their legitimacy will take a big hit if the truth comes out that hundreds, if not more, are being killed and many more injured. And thousands were put in jail, some executed. So all this page of history needs to be opened up, investigated. There need to be accountability, but the accountability, the trials will go all the way to the top, and they're not ready to abandon their rule of the country. So they needed, from their point of view, to cover up the truth.
Arthur, I'm thinking about the image of Tiananmen that is perhaps most seared in many of our minds, those of us who remember actually it playing out. I remember watching this on television and seeing the man who essentially goes out into the street and really waits for a tank to attack, and the tank does not. Can you describe that moment for our listeners and what was happening at that time?
Well, it was extraordinary, you know, and there were photographers, including Jeff Widener of AP, who took the famous tank man shot. His was the first shot that got out of Beijing, so it's become known as the definitive one. But there were other photographers and cameramen in the Beijing hotel. So the morning after the massacre was actually the afternoon, I think. And I remember my friend Tony Wasserman of NBC News, from Johannesburg, South Africa, was manning his camera position on the 12th floor balcony of the Beijing Hotel, and there was just about to be a shift change. And another friend, Gary Fairman, a mad Australian cameraman, was coming to take Tony's place. And there had been tanks and assemblies of troops in the square from daylight after the worst of the carnage had taken place. And everybody had kept their lenses trained on that situation, and nothing seemed to be changing at that moment. The very moment that Tony unclipped his camera from his tripod and Gary was about to put his camera in its place, Tony said, "Wait, mate, hold on." And he saw this lone citizen walk with a briefcase in one hand, his coat slung over the other, out of nowhere, and approach a column of tanks that was proceeding eastward out of the square. And thankfully, as we know, the tank stopped. I think could it be a credit to the tank commander to have stopped? Could it be because the martial law authorities, the Communist Party, as well, understood, oh, it's daylight, there's too many witnesses, we can't run this guy over. Eventually, his friends, after he climbed up on the tank and tried to engage the crew, convinced him to withdraw.
It was a stunning moment. Arthur Kent is a filmmaker and broadcast journalist who covered Tiananmen Square protests and recently released a short documentary called Black Night in June. You can find that at thetakeaway.org. Arthur, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Renee Xia is the director of the Chinese Human Rights Defenders Network. Renee, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.